trouble, see, I'm home.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Having a Ball podcast. I'm your host, Lucy.
And I'm Erica.
And today we're talking about the Big Street. This is our third take on this, I believe.
So well, we don't have to tell them that.
We have to, yeah. Listen, guys, life is life.
Yeah.
And we're doing what we're doing. Mm-hmm. I feel like third time's a charm.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, and we've been wanting to do a movie review for a minute, so this is a good one as ever to do.
Yeah, I really like this movie. We'll get into more about it. And
a few weeks back, we put up a Instagram story where we had a conversation about it, and I love that people were really picking up on what we were talking about, because Lucille Ball's character in this movie is very memorable.
Oh, yeah, she's something else. But okay, so the director of this movie, The Big Street, was Irving Reese. The producer was Damon Runyon. And it was based off of the short story Little Pinks by Damon Runyon, which came out, that short story came out January 27th, 1940. And if anyone is interested in reading that, you can find the entire story online. Like, if you just look it up, you can find the whole thing and a lot of his works online.
So this film was from 1942. Now, it's called The Big Street. Do you know The Big Street was a nickname for Broadway, where this movie, the plot starts, you know, off of them, where all of Runyon's stories really take place. So that's where The Big Street is.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, so he writes a lot about, you know, The Big Street and all of that. A lot of his shows and short stories, poems, things like that, they go on to be movies or Broadway, like Guys and Dolls was Broadway.
A lot of them get adapted.
There were a few other ones. Yes, they were adapted a lot. And so it was really, he has got a right to write about The Big Street, I guess.
That's amazing. We should, to do a rundown, I should have listed some of them, but
I have them.
Oh, do you? Yeah, please. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so let's see. 20 of his stories became motion pictures. Wow. I won't read all of them because that's a lot, but yeah. Lady of the Day, Little Miss Maker, The Lemon Drop Kid, Professional Soldier, The Big Street, obviously. Money from Home, Guys and Dolls, Bloodhound and Broadway. And then he also had the musical. So The Slight Case of Murder was a musical or a play, Guys and Dolls. And then radio, he also had a radio show called the Damon Runyon Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And that dramatized 52 of his short stories, which is pretty cool. And then he also had a television show that aired on CBS from 1955 to 1956. That was the Damon Runyon Theater. And then Mike McShane told Runyon stories as monologues on British TV in 1994. And then Three Wise Guys was a 2005 TV movie.
Oh, it keeps going. Wow.
It keeps going. Yeah, all the way up to 2005. Amazing. They're still doing.
That's when you know your adaptions of his work. Fantastic. So this one, of course, has Lucille Ball, and it's why we are reviewing this with Henry Fonda. And just to mention some of the people, when it first opens up, you know, you have Barton MacLane, Eugene Pallett, Agnes Moorehead, Sam Levine, Ray Collins, Marion Martin, William Orr, George Cleveland, Vera Gordon, and Ozzie Nelson in his orchestra of Ozzie and Harriet fame. So that's neat that you just see a little glimpse of them towards the end of the film. This here, now listen, if you're expecting Lucy Ricardo, you're not getting Lucy Ricardo. You might recognize the voice and the face, but you're not going to get that quirky character. Not here. Here is a more uppity entertainer type person.
Oh, you know, yes, absolutely.
Very snooty. And you know, overall, it's a very, very, very drastic difference from a zany Lucy Ricardo. So what did you like about this film?
I I liked that it was out of character for her. I liked, and that she did it really well. I had a quote. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
Whoa,
because
well,
she
the
was.
synopsis. We should, of course, introduce what the film is about. We're just talking
about. No. We don't need to tell them that.
Yeah, they can look it up. No.
Why you are go we ahead. Here? Tell them while I look for the.
All right. Well, without having to read it, pretty much it's Lucille Ball's character is an entertainer. She's a singer, entertainer, Gloria. She's a very snooty woman. And Henry Fonda's character is a busboy at a club, or one of the clubs where she sings. And, you know, she becomes disabled because her boyfriend is violent. And from the jealousy streak and the talking back, he feels offended, so he smacks her. This is 1942, guys. Some things are acceptable in 1942, as we, you know, have learned, much like in I Love Lucy. But anyway, so she becomes disabled. She falls down the stairs. And Pinks, that's Henry Fonda's character, he is very infatuated with her. And kind of becomes her lapdog, really. I mean, she, you know, mops the floor with this poor guy because he wants to help her out, because now she can't work or anything like that. She's in a wheelchair, for goodness sakes. So pretty much he's trying to get her to Florida because she's still after a wealthy man that she would like to marry.
Her ideal life.
Her ideal life. And, you
which
know,
Pink's surely is not part of.
No, because
like, she doesn't fit into that.
Just the busboy, as we learn throughout the film, she looks very down upon his sort of jobs. And what's amazing is towards the end, not the end, but maybe towards the middle of the film, where she does eventually meet up with this man that she wants to marry, the guy with the fancy life, the, you know, bachelor and all of that, who she could have married had this not happened to her, looks down upon her because of her disability, you know, so anyway, so it's pretty much that she's a, you know, romance, of course, will eventually sprinkle in towards the end for like a hot second and then disappear.
Two whole seconds. Okay. Listen, we'll talk about that when we get to what we don't like about the movie.
Okay. So what do you like about the movie? You like that it's a separation of character for Lucille Ball.
Yes, and I think she did a really good job. This is what I was looking about. This note that I had was that, you know, because Lucy's not used to playing a serious role, she asked us advice from Lafton on how to approach such a difficult part. And Lafton told her not to hold back. If you're going to play a bitch, play a bitch.
Ooh.
And she did, right?
And like, she ran with it.
she was like, okay, I got it.
Yeah, there are a lot of, you know, as we're talking, I'm going to look for these quotes, but I did write down some of the quotes because he suggests, why don't you stay in my place while you recover? And she, you might as well have told her to live in a pig pen, because she insults him tremendously for
oh, yeah.
In suggesting
I'm glad you got
that.
Some of those. Mm-hmm. The only one that I felt I should write down was evaporate. It's not even a whole quote.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I
no,
love
that.
I love when she tells someone to just evaporate.
So they're at the beach in Florida. This is when she's, they're at the beach in Florida. Maybe she says
it's
it
not
more
the
than
first
once.
Time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe she's okay. But here's what she says when he suggests taking her to his apartment. Now keep in mind, guys, he's a busboy. Of course, he doesn't make much money at that. He gets fired from this job because of her, right? I mean, it's a whole thing, but he suggests that she comes to his place. It's not much. It's just an apartment. And she says, live at your place? Get out of here, you dumb garbage collector. I mean, that pretty much sets the tone for the rest of the movie and how she behaves towards him. She's rude to everyone around her, except the boy that, or the man, excuse me, that she's infatuated with. But yeah, she eventually, like I said, becomes disabled and it all changes. But what, I guess, what you just told me what you liked or didn't like from the film, or you liked from the film, is her separation from the characters.
I do. I think if we're looking at it, story wise, mm-hmm. I don't like how she treats practically everyone.
Yeah.
I think she's got a really good group of supporters throughout the film, whether she wants to admit it or not, right? And I think she's got this really strong support group that are there to help her, and she just keeps looking down on them. And I don't like the ending. Don't like the ending.
Yeah.
I'm over here, like, if she could have walked, then they probably could have given her physical therapy. She probably could have been walking a lot sooner.
Yeah.
Than what she was. You know, like, she could have been helping, although they could have been helping her a little bit more.
And as we mentioned, this is 1942 medical attention where, you know, it seems like she immediately just resigned to sitting in bed. Of course, it frustrated her because she lives such a lavish lifestyle. But you're right. They didn't seem to even suggest any sort of, let's make those legs work or something, you know? So
yeah. Or even how to take care of yourself so that her whole upper half works. She could, you know, be learning how to do some things independently.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
yeah. And then, but then you beg the question, like, mm-hmm. would she?
That's what I'm saying. She's used
to people doing things for her. So
there's a scene in the film where I don't think that she would ever, like you said, figure it out, because there's a scene where he pretends to be her servant and she gets so excited about it. Like, you know, they start calling her Your Highness throughout this film because of her demands, because of her uppity sort of characteristic and behaviors. She's so used to being waited on. You know, think of it as a Paris Hilton, right? Paris Hilton's persona, where, you know, she's just kind of like a royalty sort of treatment. And that's what she has in this film. So just the idea that she tells Pinks that Pinks is the busboy played by Henry Fonda, fantasizes about being able to live like that again. That's her dream. So to make her happy, he pretends to be a servant, and she gets all giddy and excited about bossing him around.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah. And so from Time magazine in 1942, this is a little blurb, kind of explaining what it is. When Her Highness Lucille Ball, an impetuous nightclub queen, gets publicly slapped down the stairs. Now, how did you feel about that scene?
I feel like I have the scene itself, you know, when she gets actually hit, whether or not someone makes you jealous doesn't give you the right to slap them down the stairs.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
That being said, the smack was very theatrical, very overdramatic. I was like, she threw herself around. I was like, maybe if she hadn't have just like thrown herself, she wouldn't have fallen down the stairs. Right, I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, I get why they did it, but it was super theatrical. I was like, this is great because they're talking about Broadway, and that's definitely like a Broadway move. You're supposed to do everything
exaggerated, you know,
10 times bigger on the stage. Right. And that's what she did.
Right.
But of course, when you get down to more of the idea behind it, that he does this because, you know, well, it's not even jealousy. She breaks up with him, right?
Yeah.
She says she's decided to go somewhere, like return his ring and do I can't remember the wording.
I think he basically called her a mortgage or something that he was in control of, and she was just kind of like taking her stances to no, mm-hmm. you're not, and he didn't like exactly. that.
Yeah.
And
so what did you think about it?
The slap itself, yeah. Listen, I have seen, you know, of course, we live in a totally different time now where even just a look can be offensive. But I have seen films like with John Wayne and films of that era where slapping a woman wasn't that uncommon. It's kind of like, that's how you put her in her place sort of thing and remind her of her place, you know? And even here where she wasn't playing a housewife, she was playing an entertainer, was still struck down, and the people around her just immediately knew to cover it up or to look past it?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem, I mean, not the biggest problem, but the thing that really struck home was that he then says, as soon as she falls, he says, she was drunk, she fell, find 10 people to like back this story up. He paid people off to do it. The fact that that was just acceptable and like wasn't even thought twice of, like, yeah, he's got a lot of money, he's a man, he can just do that. You know, what kind of world? I mean, that's so scary.
Yeah. And that, you know, so she ends up like we mentioned, crippled from this. And it was uncomfortable to watch. I don't like seeing it, but I get it. It's for the theatrics of it. It could have been a little something else to make her disabled. I don't know, but just the fact that that's what they did. So it says, Her Highness, an impetuous nightclub queen, gets publicly slapped down the stairs and fetches up at the bottom, hopelessly crippled. Now this is from 1942. It looks. They mentioned that quite a bit. The writings from 1942. It looks as if she or author producer Damon Runyon were crazy. It turns out she is. A doctor explains that Her Highness, like I mentioned, that's what they end up calling her throughout the film, is a paranoiac, which means, he says, that she wants to be what she can't be. Even if she can't be, she will die. So Pinks, Henry Fonda, a love-logged busboy, takes care of her. So yeah, that's pretty much it. She's frustrated with the idea that she can't do the things. And if I can't do the things, then I might as well just end it. Just, this is it. I'm either this or I'm nothing.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say, like, we're not even talking about frustrated. We're talking about depressed. I mean,
yeah,
she is the epitome of depressed. I mean, when she's talking about how cold she is, like, it mm-hmm. is the middle of winter, but that's not what she's talking about. You better believe that, you know, Pinks has kept that apartment room super warm, and he's gotten her all the warmth that she can get.
All the caviar.
It's not a physical
cold.
It's an emotional cold. And mm-hmm. she thinks that, like, if I can just get back to the sun and where I'm known and, you know, around people that I know, then I will be happy. I just want to point this out. This is really random, but as you were reading the name of like the cast, and I put the list of the cast as well, and I wrote about Agnes Moorehead, and then I totally forgot that Agnes Moorehead was in this movie. And I was like, wait, because I know her from Bewitched. She's the, you know, mother-in-law from Bewitched, and I love her from that. And so I went, no, she's not in here. And I had to like look up a picture of her, and I went, of course, that's a young one. But anyway, sorry, that just, I felt like I needed to put that in there.
And we also see a familiar face from I Love Lucy in this film.
Which one? Hans, the one that we just talked about, right?
Hans Conried.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He makes an appearance here as well. So yeah, they go way back. So the club is run by Case Abels, which is Barton McLean. And that's, and I don't know if we've mentioned, Gloria Lyons is the name of the character that Lucille Ball plays in this film. Now, she does do some singing, and I put that in quotations because she, you know, as Lucille Ball has been known to do during her, you know, B movie era, she, her voice was dubbed. And here she does sing a song called Who Knows, lyrics by Mort Green and music by Harry Revel. Now, this sort of score or song is played throughout the whole film. It's kind of used as the soundtrack of the film. And she is, and it's reprised with her with Ozzie Nelson and his orchestra at the Florida nightclub. That's when they head over to Florida. And the vocals for Lucille are by Martha Mears. And she also has done like Drew Barry Was a Lady and all of that. But she had a dubbed for her off.
Yes. And, you know, we already talked about it in MAME, like there's a reason why she was dubbed. And I think, you know, Gloria is supposed to be this amazing singer, right? Mm-hmm. MAME wasn't a performer, right? In MAME, she's just a person and it happens to be in a musical. And so right. you can kind of get away with it not being beautiful and spot on, though, you know, we talked about that being a problem for a lot of people. But in this, she needs to sound really beautiful because that's her living in this, you know, in this show. That's what she's doing.
Right.
So you got to believe it. We didn't discuss this, but they actually had trouble casting the female, like the lack of female stars for this at RKO delayed the filming. And Lucille Ball was not the first choice for this lead. There was actually Barbara Stanwyck mm-hmm. and Jean Arthur were both approached before Lucille was.
Okay, I could also see Ginger Rogers in the role. Like
I could too, actually. Yeah. I don't know. And there's, you know, when they're hiring, there's lots and lots of names that come forth. So maybe she was suggested or thought of, and maybe she was just busy at the time. I also don't know what she was under. I don't know. Do they still do that? Like, where you sign a contract?
Yeah, for like 10 films.
Do they still do that now? Okay.
I'm sure there's all kinds of variations of contracts where it's like, you know, for music, produce 3 albums for this amount, you know, and some people, even in films, you could tell where their heart is no longer in it, but it's a commitment that needs to be fulfilled because of the contract.
Obligation.
Yeah. So I think they certainly did that when Hollywood was just starting out.
Yeah.
I mean, down to when Lucille Ball did The Greatest Show on Earth, it was kind of, she did it while pregnant and they weren't aware of her being pregnant, but she had, you know, the contract to do it. Now, she, as we mentioned, was rude to everybody. And there's a part there where she's just rude to her maid. And, you know, that's he kind of.
Oh, she talk kind about a sign of the time.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. So she tries to warn Pinks as to what he's getting himself into because she's very, you know, aware here. I mean, she's very much the diva in this
yes,
role.
But even with that being said, and this is where I say that she's got such a strong support, is that even knowing everything that she knew about Gloria, the maid, what's her name? Even her knowing everything she knew, she still supported her for a good deal of it. You see, there's like this montage of when Gloria gets hurt, they start selling off a lot of her stuff to pay for the hospital room and the care that she needs.
Right.
And, you know, it takes quite a while, quite a bit of time before her maid is like, listen, I've got to go find another job. I'm not getting paid. But she stays for quite a while. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, she's got the support that.
And the maid here is played by Louise Beavers. She died in 1962. She was an American and film and television actress. From the 1920s until 1960, she appeared in dozens of films and 2 hit television shows. She was most often cast in roles of a maid, a servant, slave, that sort of thing. And I think she's the first one who starts calling her Your Highness in this movie. And then it just kind of carries on from there.
No. Remember, it was that lady that the first one she told to evaporate, the one she gets into a fight with.
Because I
remember how much she laughs when
she does.
Says Your Highness and she starts breaking out in laughter.
Yeah. And then it's
then just continues to call her that, which I think is fun.
Yeah, so in here, as we mentioned, Henry Fonda's character is very much infatuated with her from the start. He's got photos of her on his wall, you know, and so just the idea that now, I think when we first try to record this a week ago or so, we mentioned how it's sort of an endearing sort of story, right? They're trying to, oh, look how much she cares about her, is going to take care of her. Then our cynical female side kicks in and we're like, that's also kind of creepy.
A little stalkerish. She gets hurt and he's like, perfect.
Swoop right in.
been.
Again, we can look at it like rom-coms have been wanting us to look at it for decades, where now's my chance to show her I'm the guy for her. And we're like, oh, yes, oh, you've been there all along. But then if you want to turn it and say that this is a stalker movie, now's my chance to, you know, have access to this young lady who has no idea who I am and wouldn't voluntarily hang out with me.
Right. And she's in the hospital, right? So technically, they mentioned this, where she could have gone to like the part of the hospital where it's covered for them. Like there, she probably would have had to share a room, but like they wouldn't have had to pay.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
He says she would never go for that, which if you look at it, maybe not, but he doesn't give her the chance.
That's true.
He never offers her that option. And so that's one of those ones where you're like, okay.
A lot of HIPAA laws were violated.
The only option you offer her is come move into my house.
Right.
You know.
And I have pictures of you on my wall.
Okay.
Maybe not that.
Yeah, I'm gonna be a little creepy there.
No, maybe not that. As Lucy sips on her Ivy coffee cup, which we love.
Yes.
Ivy set. So yeah, that's the premise of this film. I think it's really well done, and you know, a film or an actor does a good job if you don't like them and that's what they're doing. That's what they're supposed to, you know, like a villain is too good of a villain.
That's yeah, that's how you know that they did a good job.
Yeah.
And, Joff? Do you watch Game of Thrones?
No.
No,
no,
I can't remember. It was the one guy, he's like the son of someone, and he's an awful, awful character. He's an awful character in the books, and he played him so well that he's actually having trouble getting new like
roles,
jobs and things, or he was, I don't know if he still is, because he did so well and people disliked him so much. His character, they disliked his character so much, and that's when you're like, well, that's good, but it also can be bad.
It's also detrimental. But
should we talk about the ending?
Yes. Okay, so just in a quick recap, she wants to go to Florida. That's actually where a couple of the other characters moved after they married. That's the Violet and Nicely. Those are other characters.
We didn't even
film.
Talk about them. We should talk about them after, whenever, but I will talk about them in a little bit.
Okay, so Violet was a roommate of Pink's. Okay, so they marry and they go off to Florida, and that's where Lucy's character Gloria wants to now go. I'm not sure if she was aware that the man that
she had to have been. She had to have been. Did she know exactly that she needed a bathing suit?
At the beach,
where they needed to put her.
Yeah.
She had to have known.
She's doing what Pink's is doing to her. Following him around.
Yeah.
Look at how I took up for her.
We're talking about like a love triangle that doesn't connect.
That no one's aware of.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, she wants to go, and to get there, because they don't have any money.
Yeah.
She's not working and he doesn't have a great job. They hitchhike.
Yeah, so
there.
They do, the group that does the sort of the gambling outside of the club does a modern day GoFundMe sort of situation where they do get some money, you know, to help. But really his plan was to roll her across the country to Florida, which is hilarious. So, you know, she wants to go to Florida. She wants to get some sun. She wants to leave the depressed state that she's in, really, and follow this man as well. If I bumped into him, he'll fall in love. We'll get married. So eventually they do make their way to Florida.
The air of entitlement, even while sitting in the back of a truck in hay in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Is incredible.
Yeah,
the air,
there is a lot.
Air of entitlement as they're about to walk down the Holland Tunnel.
The Holland Tunnel. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. She's like, yes, I deserve to be here. Like, you know, it got her where she was going. So I guess that works for her, but it was crazy to me.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the couple. Nicely, Nicely, and Violet.
Yes.
And Violet. Mm-hmm. We don't have to talk about them a lot, but I do want to say that, like, I like them. I thought they were a refreshing.
Oh, they were sweet.
Change. They were so sweet to each other. They came together over, you know, she's who took his place. He was supposed to be in this eating competition at the beginning of the movie. He got sick. And so she takes his place. And from there, it just kind of spirals into this cute little actual love story.
Yeah.
Where they do end up getting married. And I thought it was just very cute to see them, you know, not only kind of fall in love on the side, but also like move and do what they wanted to do together.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah. So that's the couple that they end up meeting up with in Florida, you know, and this whole time, Violet, this is Henry Fonda's Pink's character's roommate, is still... can see the way she's treated him all this time. She saw it firsthand. She knows who this entertainer is, and she knows the treatment he was getting, before they moved to Florida, and it continues. So, I mean, she didn't change. So she says, you know, you're a really nice guy, but you're also getting taken advantage of here and disrespected. When he doesn't see it, or maybe he just ignores it. But he wants to help her out. He wants to make her feel like nothing's changed in her life.
Yeah. And okay. So the ending, I have to say that I personally don't understand the medical idea that they were trying to spin, unless they were just that big word just meant that she was clinically depressed and heartbroken and that she was going to die if she didn't get what she thought.
So are you trying to figure out what exactly was her cause of death?
Partly, yes. And what they warned him of, like, because she, the psychiatrist or whatever, is like, she's going to die if whatever, like, so what, just please explain that to me, because I don't understand it.
From what I read earlier, and I'll look it up as we talk here, it's a, I'm guessing, psychiatric condition, whereas if you can't do or be this thing, now, I don't know, like a hypochondriac, for example, is obviously somebody who is always going to the doctor, going to the hospital, you think you're always sick, but you're not going to die from a mental condition of you think, there is no
right.
physical jump from you thinking you're going to die to actually something has to occur medically or tragically for it to happen, right? So
yeah,
this,
what's the name of this?
Let me find that for you. So it's a paranoiac. So it's paranoiac, and from this little blurb I have, it's just means that she can't be what she wants to be, and if she can't be the thing, then she will die. Now, I know that's a leap. Maybe it's a dramatic or traumatic way of explaining it, but nonetheless, if you watch this film, she goes from, I can finally dance with you, I'm finally in love with you. Now, let me just, as you're looking up some information, she's in Florida. She does see this man that she wants to eventually marry because he's an eligible bachelor. He has a lot of money. He's, you know, and he seems smitten with her as well. Decatur Reed is the character's name. Until, now here's the thing. She's laying, sitting on the beach because she doesn't have to walk or show that she can't walk. So he comes up to her, talk to her. He is none the wiser that she is disabled from the waist down. So, he invites her, let's go out, all that. No, well, you know, I'm busy. I've got a car coming, all kinds of excuses. Now, you can only do that for so long. And later on, they bump into him in the club while Pink's is rolling her. And he's just like, never mind. I want nothing to do with this because you are broken. You know, you are no longer for me because you can't walk. So she's upset, and now the depression's even triple, I'm assuming. And so that's where, you know, it starts to fall apart for her again, mentally, emotionally. The part that you're getting to is she's finally seeing, well, no, he tries to throw this party for her to make her feel better. He, listen, we're not going to, it's a whole thing. He commits crimes.
He breaks the law. Yeah.
Dress. He's okay with it. He steals somebody's jewelry and dress, and he gets, you know, he blackmails somebody who's having an affair. It's a whole thing.
And it's messy.
Yeah, it gets messy. But just know that he pulls off a fancy party for her where she thinks the whole town is there for her, just like before. He's trying to keep her life uninterrupted. That's not the case, though. It's all a facade, right? But because he did all that for her, she sees him in a different light, finally. And this is where, you know, go ahead. You can tell us what happens here.
Yeah. She takes a step because he's like, you can take this step. You can do it. You can walk up to the balcony with me, whatever. And she takes the step and then she dies in his arms and he carries her up, but she could have just done in the first place, obviously, but he carries her up. Yeah. So I looked it up because I was like, it just doesn't make sense. And now this is where you're at the point where you're like supposed to just believe, you know, suspense of disbelief, right? Mm-hmm. Because a paranoiac is someone who is paranoid. Paranoia is the thought process that's believed to be heavily influenced by anxiety, fear. There might be delusions, irrationality. Treatment includes antipsychotic medication.
Yeah.
Therapy, any of this stuff that they could have done for her. But nowhere, you know, this was just a really quick
blur.
Search, but mm-hmm. Nowhere have I found that you can just die from achieving or not achieving what she thought. I don't know.
Yeah. So the jump there
was her
extreme.
Idea was crushed. But yes, I didn't like that. I was like, I think this is just a horrible ending to this movie. I think they could have just lived. She finally figured out that he was, you know,
the one for her.
Yeah. And they could have just left it there. And I would have been happy with the cheesiness of it all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But instead they killed her. So.
Well, really, if we're really going to get technical, it's her former boyfriend's first degree murder charge or some sort of second degree murder charge, because eventually she died from that one slap, you know. But yeah. You know, it's a good film. It displays Lucia Ball's range of acting abilities here. You know, like I said, there's nothing funny. She does nothing funny in this film. It's serious, it's frustrating, it's sad. A lot of it is sad. And she does spend a lot of her time depressed because of this condition. And poor Henry Fonda's character is just being mistreated the entire time. But, you know, it's sweet for a couple of minutes. And he loves her so much that he does so much for her. Like you said, he breaks the law at the end of the film. But, you know, it's very fitting for the 1942 era. And I do recommend watching this. You know,
oh yeah, Lucille and Ball. We didn't mention this, but at some point Lucille Ball says that this is her favorite movie. It was her favorite movie to be in, to produce, be part of. So I think that,
and this is at the beginning of her relationship with Desi Arnaz, 1942.
Oh yeah,
so she was.
We didn't even talk about how he was super. He was kicked off set at one point because he was so worried about her cheating on him
with Henry Fonda.
Well, maybe not, but being so close to Henry Fonda, that he would like come on the set and be like there all the time, and finally they're like, okay, no, you need to leave,
you gotta go,
gotta get out of here.
Yeah,
we also didn't discuss that. So this was done while she was doing a lot of her B movies. Mm-hmm. You know, she said she was quoted as saying, you know, nothing much seemed to be happening for me at the studio. This is when she was with RKO. My $1,000 weekly paycheck was regular, but it was still irregular among the Bees. She was still a regular on the Bees, and this helped her kind of move out of that. And this movie was re-released in 1955 at the height of her career. So that helped as well.
Yeah.
And she did get an offer at the end of this movie from MGM based on the performance she did during this role.
Oh, okay. Okay. And continuing with the review I started with, there's a portion that says, pretty Lucille Ball, who was born for the parts Ginger Rogers sweats over, tackles her emotional role as if it were sirloin and she didn't care who was looking. There's also a head waiter played by Sinister Saturnine, or is it Saturnine? Hans Conried. He packs so much cold, superb style into his half minute that he makes everybody else's fun look forced. Wow. So that's our Hans Conried, who we also see in I Love Lucy a couple of episodes. So yeah, that is from 1942, The Big Street. It is a, you know, one of many films that she did during that era. Like we mentioned, Queen of the Bee movies at that time. And this is our first time seeing here in this film, a snippet of Ozzie Nelson. Oswald George Ozzie Nelson, born March 20th, 1906 to June 3rd, 1975, was an American entertainer who originated and starred in The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet radio and television series with his wife and his two sons, which was pretty big during that era. So we see a little bit of him there. But yeah, that's that. Do you have any more information about this film?
No, no, I think that we pretty much summed it up.
So let us know if you guys have seen it. What do you think of it? Is it one of your favorites? Is it one you could do without? What did you think of, you know, Lucy's departure from her zany characters that you guys are used to seeing? And, you know, Henry Fonda and everyone else involved too. So let us know, please let us know in a review or something, you know, what you thought of this film.
Yeah. All right. Wonderful.
So find us everywhere.
Find us everywhere. Yeah.
We haven't done this in a little while. Yeah. So find us everywhere. Havenaballpod@gmail.com for any emails. Please rate and review us. We'd love to see reviews. We haven't gotten one in a little bit. So it would be great to know what you guys think of our podcast. And Havenaballpod on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Thanks, guys. Yes.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.